Hello, and thanks for tuning in to the Built and Brewed podcast. This show is a behind-the-scenes look at building a brewery from the ground up and attempts to figure out why anyone would ever do this. Every episode covers a step in the process and all the details that go along with it. If you're a craft beer enthusiast or looking to open up a brewery yourself, you're in the right place. Enjoy your host, Preston Andrini, founder of Red Engine Brewing Company, as he interviews craft beer professionals and consultants that have helped him along the way.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is episode 11. Today, I think this show is going to be popular amongst the options in our queue, but today we're talking to Julie Rhodes from Not Your Hobby Marketing. Julie, welcome to the show. How's it going?
Hi, good. I'm great. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're excited. So Julie and I met at CBC two years ago in Denver. Mm-hmm.
In Denver.
And yep. And was a reference from Carrie, one of the guys that we had on earlier in the show. We met up there, and now we're at the point where a brewery is almost opening. We have a marketing plan, and that is the topic for today, marketing. So we're going to kind of go through what you should know, maybe demystify some items, and get you more prepared for when you're making your marketing plan. So, Julie, hey, let's kick this off with, how'd you come up with the name?
Well, I hope that no one takes offense to this. I hate to be like kind of, it's sort of, some people take it as mean, but I'm not trying to be mean. A lot of people in the beer space start off as like a home brewer. And that's obviously like a hobby that they have. At that point, you brew at home, you make it for your friends, maybe for your neighbors, maybe for family. And then usually the course is that you enter some homebrew competitions. And if you start realizing like, hey, we're making some great stuff, like maybe I should turn this into a business. So, but brewing beer as a hobby is totally different when you pull a license and decide to start making money off of selling said beer. And so I kept finding myself telling people like, please don't treat this as a hobby. We actually have to take this seriously and treat it like a business. And so Not Your Hobby Marketing Solutions was born. Although I work on things beyond marketing strategy now. Like I also live in the retail sales world and distribution management. So I should have rethought my name a little bit, or at least the second part, you know, but that's all right. I don't want to change my LLC at this point.
Yeah, we're in too deep right now. And anybody who's gotten a hold of you, they know what the options menu is to use you as a consultant.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think you're established and safe there.
I hope so. Yeah.
So can you give the listeners like a little background, how you got into marketing, and then eventually the craft beer space or adult beverage space, like specifically?
Honestly, it all goes back to college. So maybe a little bit before then. So my very first job was at a restaurant. I was 15. I was a cashier at a little barbecue restaurant. I'm from Texas originally. I'm from Dallas. So my dad had to drive me to work, but that was the very first position that I had. And something, I don't know, it was fun working in a restaurant. Honestly,
it is fun. It's like
I liked the atmosphere. People that I worked with. Yeah. And it was the people that came in were nice. And I found that I was good at customer service, honestly. And I excelled, and I stuck around in the hospitality, like service industry all the way through college. I had to pay for my own degree. I was absolutely petrified of student loans. And so I started working on just like a business, just like a general business degree. Eventually I branched off into specializing in marketing, which is what I have my BA in. But that entire time that I was in school, I was bartending, I was managing, I was waiting tables. So it went from just general restaurants into bars, specifically bars, and then more specifically like English kind of pub sort of tavern settings. And that was like late 90s So that was right about the time, when craft beer kind of started making an appearance in places. Because up until that point, it had been very like import heavy. So I was very familiar with things like Fuller's ESB and, you know, Weinstephaner and like, you know, some of the other like German and English stuff that was coming in. But then all of a sudden things started coming on my radar, like New Belgium, Fat Tire, like that was a big deal when it came out, Red Hook, ESB, you know, like Widers and Shipyard and Dogfish Head and things like that. And all of a sudden there was a, and I can't forget like Anchor and Sierra Nevada, like those things started popping into my universe. And I thought, oh God, this is really interesting. Right. Like I was pretty intrigued by the flavors.
You remember what I was just going to say, you're probably going into it right now, but just like what the thought about craft beer was like at that time, what you had thought or the customer was thinking about it.
It was just so much more interesting than the stuff that existed. You know what I mean? Like it was adventurous. It was kind of against the grain. It was sort of like, oh, this is like a scrappy, random brand that for some reason is available. You know, I remember the first time I drank Red Hook ESB and I was like, what is this? What is happening? Like it was a whole, oh gosh, Pyramid Apricot. That was another one that I had way back in the day that I was like, what is going on? Because at that point, it had just been really just like yellow lagers and maybe some old school like import styles like bitters and things like that, like Helles, maybe some Dunkel, stuff like that. But, you know, nothing that was that adventurous, like flavor wise. And the fact that it came from the US, it was like, oh, this is becoming readily available. This is kind of cool, right? So, whereas up to that point, if somebody wanted something outside of the realm of like, you know, mainstream beer, you would make them a cocktail because there were so many flavors and like you could innovate with that, right? Like there was a lot more flexible.
Yeah, a lot more combinations. And that's actually what happened.
More combinations.
With craft beer, the combinations started coming out, like the different
you could be
yeast
creative
hops.
With it.
Yeah, it really started like blowing people's minds. So
it is kind of funny when you think about it, like the craft beer pioneers, like, I don't know what was going through like Ken Grossman's head when he like set off on that path. Right. But like, it is kind of a mirror of cocktail culture in the fact that like, let's think of something gastronomically, right. That like tastes different or comes off different or comes out different, you know, I don't know. Anyways, musings there.
Well, and now, you know, because those options are supporting like other industries, like the hop industry, farming, like cloning laboratory, stuff where they're like, trying to genetically engineer hops, like, you know, like almost like other kinds of produce. So it like grows more consistent or it's, resistant to fungus or, it has a certain flavor profile. Those, that variety is, it's much bigger than just the flavors, you know, that are in beer now. It's supporting like so many other industries. White labs, like all the different yeasts or any of the other, like yeast manufacturers, like, they have stuff in that they bring out, special strains or stuff from all over the world. Yeah. It's just the variety is like, incredible.
It's endless, pretty much. It's only limited by your imagination at this point.
We've seen some really wild. I saw something recently with licorice in it, and I was like, "Wow, I don't know." Ooh. Like, let me take a hack at that. I don't know how it's going to be because I've said that before,
that
right? And it's
said,
been great.
Yeah, just because you can doesn't mean you should,
right?
Necessarily.
And that's probably, you know, you got back to like Ken Grossman with Sierra Nevada, like maybe that's what, you know, got him. I don't know him or the story very well, but like, you know, maybe like, hey, we can throw some more hops in this. Let's see what happens. You know, let's give it a whirl.
So
today, marketing, we got a little bit more of your background. You're in bars and restaurants. You're kind of in the service industry.
Yes.
Where does it go from there?
Yeah. So it's, the further I got into my business degree, the more I realized that like, not to get all meta here or anything, but the same way that I was connecting with customers at the bar and like helping them find something that they wanted to drink or something that they wanted to enjoy. I actually really enjoyed that side of the business. And I thought, how can I like make that my area of study? Well, there's marketing, right? Because it's very much like matchmaking, right? In that we're like talking to people about like the benefits and the aspects of like certain products and services and things like that, and making sure that you're educating people basically about what there is out there. And that's pretty much what marketing is. Honestly, it is a form of like teaching and communicating with people. So I chose marketing as my area of study. And by the time I got out of college, the job offers that I got, it was like, ugh, it's like office space kind of like job offers where I would be sitting
like
in a cubicle
TPS report and everything.
And I was so sad. I was like, I do not want to work in the corporate world. Like that seems awful to me just as a person, just my personality. And so I actually stayed in the service industry and like didn't use my degree for a really long time. Just because I didn't want to work in a cubicle. So,
You were like almost scared to like take a marketing job.
I didn't want to be in like a typical marketing corporate desk job, like Monday through Friday. That just seemed really offensive to me for some reason. So it's fine for other people, just not right for my personality. And so, I stuck around like managing pubs and taverns and places like that. And eventually I ran into a brewery sales rep and I was like, wait, what is it that you do? Tell me what this mm-hmm. is.
It says brewery like, sales rep so on your tag.
I was like, wait, so you get to run around to all these places where I know people that work already because I'm already in the industry, right? And you talk about beer. And then you sell them beer and you get paid to do that. And they're like, yes. And
not
like,
a lot of downsides.
Why am I not doing this? I'm so down with this. So shopped my resume out for a little bit, landed a job with an import company, actually, that was bringing in German beer. And also, you know, for some other areas around Europe as well, but mainly around Germany and Austria. And worked with them for a very long time. Switched jobs, went to another import company, started specializing more in selling like Belgian and like English specialties, stuff from Scotland, but also from Germany as well. And I stayed in that space. And the further I got along, the more I learned about like sales and distribution. And this kind of ties into something that I think we're going to talk about as well, in that like this evolution of marketing within like the beer space.
Yeah, that's a great transition.
It's a good segue, right?
Yeah, let's start with how marketing got into the beer space.
Yeah, it's honestly, those were like probably throughout the 2000s that was happening, that I was like working my way through the supplier side of the industry. And I was the only one in my company that had a marketing degree. So literally everyone was like, oh, we need to do some marketing stuff. Julie has a marketing degree. Just give it to her.
Okay.
So that's a lot of how marketing got done, I would say, in the early days of like specialty beer, was that you just had somebody that existed in your company that had some kind of marketing training and you just had them do it like as a side hustle.
It almost wasn't like a priority item.
It wasn't a priority item. And you definitely didn't have dedicated marketing folks unless you were like a big, like national brewery or international brewery, right? So like if you were at that point where, you know, I don't know the timeline of them specifically, but like, you know, big regional breweries like Sierra Nevada and you know what I mean? Like big, maybe.
Yeah, they have entire like, departments dedicated to this and budgets and everything.
Exactly. And that happened a lot sooner than some of the smaller like independent folks, right? Mm-hmm. So by the way, import companies for beer run a very lean operation. So literally we had like 10 employees and I was the only one with marketing experience.
So oh, wow.
It got put on my plate. But I will say this, by the end of, and I did supplier side sales for like 12 years. So by the end of my career, I would say, or the end of my career in supplier sales, because I'm still going now, but I would say the last like 3 to 5 years of that sales role for me, you saw people actually having like dedicated marketing people. So they were hiring marketing folks to be in-house, doing 100% of the marketing work themselves. And on top of that, the last couple of years of that time for me, I saw people getting even more specialized. So then you would have like just a social media person or just a website developer or just somebody that handled like label design and merchandise design and stuff like that. So it got very, very specialized as time went on. And, you know, I've been doing Not Your Hobby Marketing for a little over 3 years now, and I've seen it go even further. So we've gone even further down the rabbit hole in that now people are, you know, a lot of independent breweries have like a director of marketing, and then they have people that help them as well. So now you're getting entire departments. So it's pretty serious now, I would say.
Yeah, because just flashback to our project here. You know, we don't have regional sales. We don't even have local sales. But when I look around at the breweries in Ventura County, there's some players out here. Like there are breweries that are popular. They got their marketing. They got their brand really well defined. They've found like their customers, where they exist, what they like, and they're you know, delivering this message or marketing to them. And it's a little intimidating, you know, like if you don't have a game plan, you're losing. And it may not be like, I think people in the beer space are kind of community oriented, you know, we all win or we all lose, like, you know, on really big topics. So I don't think there's direct, like, oh, you stole my pint sales or whatever. But I mean, they do have, in the market locally, there are some people that own it, you know, or they're the first top three. They're always in the top three choices or of places to go or beer to grab at the store. It's always like, you know, there's always a top three brands that are like, you know, consistently getting rebought. So, you know, even like a new person like myself with this project, we feel the need to have a plan put together and to kind of know what goals need to be hit and how to hit them, you know, even more importantly. So, which we'll get to a little bit later in the show. So, like that kind of leads me to basically the exact same point that we're at in the conversation and in the project is like, when do you recommend people start addressing this issue of a marketing plan? You most likely will hit it in your business plan. You're going to have to write some form of a marketing plan in your business plan. And then later after some other, after you push kind of the project down the road further, you're going to revisit this. It's like, okay, now we actually have a product to sell and we need it. We need that to happen. So, you know, between the initial business plan component writing and then when you're actually selling the product, when do you recommend people? Because I'm sure people come to you all sorts of different times, but when's optimum? When do you see like the most success?
It's hard to say because every brand is different. And like, you know, building a business plan, it's also going to depend on like, you know, do you plan on selling beer in retail or are you just going to be like on site with like a tap room? Some brands, I know this sounds crazy, but I've seen this happen recently, are 100% like digital. Like they don't even have a physical location anymore. I know that sounds nuts, but.
Are they contract brewing?
They're either contract brewing or they are selling into retail, but they literally have no physical taproom location. Okay. So they just have a production facility and everything is on the website. You can find out more information about them. Like you can buy stuff, say at like a liquor store or a grocery store or whatever. I've actually seen some established brands sort of downgrade and get out of the taproom business model aside, right? As soon as you create the business plan, you should probably poke around and do a little bit of initial research. It's okay to have just like a wireframe for your marketing program for the business plan. But as soon as you like secure financing and you have a good idea of your location and when you might be open, things like that, I encourage people to start working on their marketing plan as soon as humanly possible. Because as you know, personally, with your situation is that you aren't even open yet, but you guys have been marketing like crazy. And it's like building brand awareness and anticipation and also some customer loyalty before you even get the doors open, which is amazing. That's like invaluable. So, I'm not just saying that because I'm a marketing lady, but as soon as humanly possible, start building your marketing plan.
And it will take a long time to be happy with what you have, because I think there's a stage where during development where you're kind of plugging in ideas and stuff like that, and it's really patchy. There's no clear direction that, you know, for a specific item, you know how to engage. You have ideas already picked out. You have like kind of like an ammo cache of like marketing bullets that you're just ready to let go. And
yeah,
so you're kind of piecing it together. And it's a little difficult to do that in the beginning. But after a couple pieces come together, you start understanding the landscape a little bit, and you know where you're at. You know, you're not like lost on this in this big map or this big spreadsheet. There's information that you can share, like you mentioned earlier. Like these marketing departments now, they have like people for each component. You know, social media, email, you know, events or mm-hmm. offsite or retail, wholesale, whatever they have. They have very clear jobs to do and execute specifically. And your marketing plan is essentially what you're going to share with each division and those goals mm-hmm. and kind of, yeah. So it takes a little while. I was in the camp of as soon as humanly possible.
Yes. And today, I mean, thinking in terms of today, there's 9,000 some odd craft beer brands that are out there. Right now, like functioning breweries that are at least on the radar in terms of like the Brewers Association. So like independent breweries that are on record, right? That hold licenses. That is the most that we've had, you know, since Prohibition, basically. So it's not an easy market out there. It is super competitive. And yes, there is this like overall spirit of like we win together and like don't, you know, like rising tide mm-hmm. lifts all boats, right? But at the same time, we're getting to the point where people will help you to a certain extent, but technically that person's your competitor, so they might, you know, give you like a little bit, they might give you an inch, but you actually need like a mile. So it does help to get some assistance if you feel like this is not in your wheelhouse or you don't feel comfortable, or if you don't have time to do like the continuing education piece on your own, because that is an option as well. It just takes, it's a little bit more time consuming though.
So the following the statement, as soon as humanly possible, in the beginning on the timeline to open, you have more time. And, you know, you're like, oh, I could take this project on. And, you know, for us, thank God we got this mostly out of the way before today, because today there's too many irons in the fire. There's things going all different mm-hmm. directions. We're happy that this is a place when we turn to, it's like, okay, we kind of have this one put together a little bit and we don't have to worry about it. But the time component, and you said it earlier, like the homebrew hobby thing, like, and Lucas, our lawyer, also like echoed the same thing, is that the craft beer space is very like do it yourself. It's very DIY. And mm-hmm. and I think, you know, there's like just whatever's attracting people, that trait like comes up a lot. People like want to be involved in each little aspect of the business. And this is one that takes like, you know, you want experience, you want a tried and true process. You know, you don't really want to trial and error it too long before, you know, your brand, you like devalues the brand, you know what I mean? Or there's the wrong message is out there or whatever. So what are, Julie, what are some good examples of either beer brands or other brands that are in the marketing space that are having success, and like, what has it done for their brand?
I mean, there's a ton. And then I also, it kind of depends on the size as well, like relatively speaking, like what you're actually looking at as far as like, you know, regional, micro, tap room, you know what I mean? Brew pub, mm-hmm. like stuff like that. But I would say I usually like to, because I teach classes and I run like a group coaching program, and I also do a lot of speaking events. So I try to include examples for people of like really standout marketing campaigns or people that are doing things right. And this is not comprehensive, by the way. I'm probably leaving out some really amazing brands.
Oh, it's fine. It's just an example.
Recognition. Yeah. But I would say I really like Divine Barrel in North Carolina. They're a smaller independent brewery. I really like their marketing campaigns. I would say Trillium as well. They're from they're up in the Northeast. They have a fantastic Instagram feed that is just like absolutely amazing. One from my backyard is Denver Beer Company. They do amazing stuff with their marketing stuff as well. Like I say marketing stuff. I shouldn't generalize it that way. Their marketing content is absolutely fantastic. But if you're looking like the OGs, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. folks that have been doing it a really long time. You may love them or hate them, but Oscar Blues is like, man, that disrupted the marketing space big okay. time back in the day. And they still have hardcore loyal followers, like brand loyalists. So take a cue from what they're doing. If that fits your brand identity, like if you're kind of on the same path, oh man, just, yeah, great stuff. By the way, their original, I think their original marketing director, Chad, I think Chad Milis, he has his own marketing agency now called Turn It Up Media. And they also handle, like they consult now other beer brands, which is cool. They did not pay me to say that, by the way. I just really respect what he does.
Sure.
he's a great marketing hive mind. Sierra Nevada, 100%. If you want like textbook, like website optimization, so good, right? Content marketing out the wazoo. Like it's, their blog is incredible. Their emails are incredible.
I've been noticing in the last couple months, Sierra Nevada has been doing beer with food. Like their beer mixed in with something mm-hmm. like chicken or like a beer can chicken, but it's with their beer, obviously. And that's been something new that they've been bringing content out with. So
it's not, it's like, I always refer to that as like beer adjacent content marketing. So like you as a consumer, you're probably also interested in food, right? So they've actually pinpointed you as like, this is an interest. Like I mentioned Denver Beer Co. They know a lot of their target audience is very outdoorsy, right? Like, that might be a far gone conclusion, or it's like Colorado people are outdoorsy.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense. Right. And they also like dogs. They like animals. Right. So you'll see a lot of their marketing images. Like if you go through their social media feeds, it's like people camping with the beer, people rock climbing with the beer, hanging out with their dogs, hanging out with their cats, you know, whatever it is. Right. And it sort of fits into that whole mold. And the idea is that you can picture yourself in that same situation, just like you can picture yourself making beer can chicken with something, with a product from Sierra Nevada. Like that is great marketing, right? Like it's situational marketing. It pertains to your interests. And that is one of the best lessons that you could learn. I did not plan this segue, by the way, but knowing who your target audience is, like who you're trying to reach, their preferences, their habits, their interests, their hobbies, you know, things like that, and connecting with them on a level that is not just in the constraints of the beer world, basically.
So I think that's a good, why don't we just, one of the things we were going to do on this podcast is kind of go over our marketing plan, at least like the tabs, and kind of give, some ways to start developing. One of the things that we talked about beforehand was The marketing plan is the what, like what you need to do. And then the mm-hmm. how and the why is up to you, like to fill in. And that's mm-hmm. definitely the most difficult part also. Like you get this big spreadsheet. You're like, okay, yeah, this is going to be it. And then you have to fill it in and you realize, oh crap, man, I really don't know the answer to that. Or this yeah. answer feels weak to me. I don't know if anybody's going to feel the same, or even people on like, on my team, I have an idea, I bring it up and they're like, and I think that's good. You know, like you need to get, filtered and, you know, putting those, things into this plan to kind of get weeded out or filtered out. Maybe cost is an issue or availability of whatever it is that you need, or, you know, so it'll kind of work its way out when it, when you decide how easy or effective it is to do, as yeah. you go through your plan. So let's just start off. This is our marketing plan template. The first tab is goals. So we have, mm-hmm. we had some simple goals because one, we're not open. And so the goals are very simple at this point. But we could talk about like what some future goals might be. So Juliet asked us, hey, like write down three, no more than four goals. And what we're going to do is hone in on these goals, find out how exactly or how and why we need them or and how we're going to get them. So our goals are really simple: social media growth, email subscribers, and website traffic. So we just want to let people mm-hmm. know that we exist. So those are some goals. And one of the things that Julie keeps hammering over and over is how to they have to be measurable. So a lot of times, like you don't each month, you need to be able to measure. If, for instance, if it's like grow your social media, you need to have a target goal, right? And then are you at the end of the month, like review, are you hitting it? You have kind of anything to like? There's a lot more details in there.
Yeah,
you want to add on?
No,
to that?
There's. So yeah, I would encourage people start thinking about like what you want to accomplish. Like it's really fun to get together, you know, and say like, let's kick ass at our marketing, right? Like awesome, mm-hmm. let's do
fist
this.
Bump, chest
but then
bump.
Like, what does that actually mean? You know, it's like when I work with people in sales and they're like, yeah, I just want to sell more beer. And I'm like, wow, that's super vague. Okay. So you've got to get more specific with that. And the only way it's funny because I pride myself on teaching like modern, like marketing and sales techniques and things like that. But a lot of the strategies that I use and a lot of the principles that I fall back on are really like old school, like business cliches. I hate to say that, but what can be measured can be managed, right? So we need a way to measure your progress to see if you've done any better. You can't just like wing it and be like, well, we feel like we did better. Yeah. What do you think? Okay. Yeah, we did great. Awesome. But there's nothing to like base that off of. So we go to numbers, and you know how much I love data. So yeah, you know, making sure that you have results specific goals. Like if you want to grow, if you want to get more people to your website, then measure your website traffic. You can use Google Analytics for free and measure how many visitors you have like on a monthly basis to your website. And if it's going up, that's a good thing. Even if you don't have like an end number in mind, or like the number of website visitors, like even if you don't know that much about it, you literally could just say our goal for the next, you know, 6 months to a year is to make sure that website visitors increase every single month, like from month to month. And if it went up, awesome, you met your goal. If it went down, we might need to, you know, tweak something, right? We might need to course correct. So just making sure that you have like 2 to 4 things that you can measure and rely on. And this is key right here, not to interrupt you, but this is key, is remembering that it needs to be things that will benefit your specific brand the most, right? So this is where knowing your target audience is so incredibly important. If you have an audience that is not big on social media, I can't name one right now, but then that might not be something that you want to focus on. Or if you don't have a big email community yet and you're not good at email and that's not something that you think you have the bandwidth for, don't set a goal for email marketing. Does that make sense?
So like, yeah, you want to be able to win here. You want to,
yeah,
exactly.
You
want to
set yourself up for success. Yes, exactly. You don't want to set yourself up to fail.
And as we've gone over, like as you're measuring things, if you're hitting the goal if you're hitting the goal needs to get changed and you need to push it out further or, you know, or focus in like specifically for, you know, like followers on the social media. I think something really easy for everybody to grab onto, but, you know, you might want to dive into like engagement or reach and find out what are the things that we're doing that keep our followers engaged. And how far out, you know, are we getting this reach? How many people are seeing it that don't follow you? So whether
I was just going to say this often happens in the first year of your existence because you have no reference point. You know what I mean? You're literally starting from scratch. So it's like with you guys, we had to course correct a little bit because the response was so great. We were killing our goals together, you know, and it was something that, if you find that you're absolutely squashing your goals, like don't leave them in place. you can amend them. Yeah, because you always want to improve things and you're trying to accomplish things. But if you're brand new and you don't have a record of anything yet, it might be something that you have to change maybe like after the first quarter or the second quarter or halfway through the year, you know, things like that. But you always want to challenge yourself. It wants to be I hate the name of it, but it's a really good concept. It's a BHAG from Jim Collins. It's a big, hairy, audacious goal. And that is from, oh my gosh, what Jim Collins book is that? He has so many good business books. I think it's from Good to Great. And that's a great read for any entrepreneur out there. But he says that your goal should be challenging, right? So you should have this big, scary, like it should scare the shit out of you, right? But it's a challenge and, you know, you're not going to improve or progress if you don't challenge yourself and you don't think like ambitiously. So that's the point of that. Yeah.
So just to follow up on that, for the purpose of the scorecard or the goal tracker or however you're, you know, kind of gathering this data, and your big, hairy, audacious goal. At the end of each month or quarter or whenever your measurement periods are, you either want to know whether you have done it or you have not done it.
Yes.
And that keeps it, the big, hairy, audacious goal, it keeps it simple. We either are doing it or are not doing it. And then, you know, like you had mentioned, course correct if you need to.
Yeah. And then I defer to like an old school business principle, which is using SMART goals. So SMART is an acronym. It stands for specific, measurable, attainable. I think you've seen my stuff. I have put like an extra A for ambitious in there. And then also relevant and then time bound. So like you have a deadline, right? So if you can follow that pattern in like goal creation, is just make it very specific on what you're doing. Make it measurable, like stick a number in there or say like an increase or decrease, whatever it might be. Make it ambitious, you know, audacious, but also make it attainable. So like this has more to do with sales than marketing, but like a lot of times I work with people and they'll say, I want to sell my beer in 10 states by the end of this year. But yet they have like a, you know, like a 7-barrel brew house or something. And I'm like, yeah, that's not going to work too much. So like
you could have an awesome marketing team at that point.
You want to make it achieve it.
Yeah. We're not going 10 states with 7 barrels.
I don't even know if you could do that with like a third shift of brewing. Like you'd have to have like round the clock to do that. But you do want to make it feasible for your organization of like where you're at or where you want to be by the end of the year. And then make sure it's relevant in that it helps your brand out the most, like at that point in time where you are. And then the timely part is just giving yourself a deadline to get there.
So you had kind of talked about sales, and sales and marketing are not the same thing, but
nope.
But they might have the same goal in mind, which is to, you know, make enough money to pay your bills or whatever. Like, yes. It's going to end with a loyal sale.
Yes.
That's where it should end.
It's kind of like one of those Venn diagrams with like the two circles, and you have like a sales circle and like a marketing circle, and they sort of overlap in the middle. So like sometimes they play together and sometimes they don't. And then they can also kind of chase each other as well in a cycle. So you can't have sales without marketing, and marketing will fuel your sales. And those two departments have to play nice together, and they have to communicate with each other. Honestly, the way that I do a little bit of like infrastructure consulting as well. And when I talk to people about operations, is that I stress the point that a brewery is like an ecosystem, right? And you've got to have all your departments not working independently, because then you get this like this linear, you know, sort of organizational chart. And it should look more like a wheel than it does like a linear chart, if that makes sense. So like everybody is working together like a flywheel, because production needs to talk to sales and marketing, but they also need to talk to operations, and operations needs to talk to everybody. Finance needs to talk to everybody. Marketing needs to talk to production and sales, and so on and so forth, right? So you have different people like pinging off each other. And if there's a loss of communication in any of that, well, it's just going to be a big giant mess. But that's what I help people do, honestly, a lot of the time.
Bringing things together. Get organized and get purposeful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, we use tools like this marketing template and the marketing plan in talking about this, is like really going back to basics, right? Because, and I'm sure this is in your brain, you got to worry about permits, build outs, equipment, recipes, dollars, you know, hiring staff, like doing all these things, right? Your marketing needs to really start off like at the very, very beginning with like tiny building blocks, right? So drilling down into what is the brand identity? Like, what do you do really well? What makes you unique? What makes you stand out better than others? And then building from there, what are we capable of doing? Do I have time to do social media? Do I have time to do my own website? You know, so you go from like concept to strategies to channels to budget, and then you wrap it all together in one big, and that's kind of the gist of a marketing plan in general, is just that big environment.
So the tab I'm actually on right now is the funnel/plan tab. So we have goals, a goal tracker, we have a scorecard, are you doing it or not, yes or no. The next tab is actually our funnel or plan. So this is a little overview, but some of the things here are like, you know, how are we going to attract somebody? How are we going to interest them? What types of purchases can they make, or are we encouraging them to make? How do we retain them? And then ultimately, how do they turn into a loyal customer? So, this is the overview. And we do this with in the fire service too. You know, everyone needs to be on the same page with the plan, the big picture, which could be as simple as like put out the fire, or here, you know, sell beer. Well, you might need to be a little more specific, but that's the big picture, like the plan. Okay. And then, we can start from the bottom, but like tactics would be like an individual effort that like a very specific, you know, individual effort. And then a bunch of tactics together will make a strategy. And then a couple strategies will make a plan. And so you do start, you know, really wide with, you know, we can just do the example, sell beer. And then a strategy to do that could be through, which we've already talked about, like through social media. So trying to sell beer with the social media strategy. And then a tactic, you know, to add on to that would be like a specific post that you've put your energy into to be very purposeful for the point of selling beer on social media. You know, it could be like a new can release or something seasonal or whatever the really specific effort is, you know, under tactics. So, Julie, is really good at this. When I started doing these, the plan, the strategies, and the tactics, I think creativity, you know, we talked about it earlier, is kind of, you know, like you're limited only by that. And having a consultant in this area or somebody has experience with marketing can definitely help you develop more strategies, more plans, and more tactics so that these areas of your spreadsheets can kind of get filled out. Because one of the things I felt like was I didn't know that some of the examples that you used were like options, and yeah. getting to hear it from like Julie here in this case, you know, it's like, yeah, well, don't forget about this and don't forget about that. And these could be things as easy as like radio ads to we recently, a couple months ago, we did like a challenge coin hunt. It was like, you know, kind mm-hmm. of like based around a giveaway, you know, giveaway item or so there are all these little things, you know, it's like that didn't have anything to do. It was not beer itself, but
yeah,
its plan was to encourage beer sales.
Yes. Yeah. So there's, marketing. I always try to come up with a really good analogy for this. And I feel like the one that I keep going back to all the time is like dating. Right? Like not inappropriate in any way.
Yeah.
Right? Like I've said that to you guys before.
Yeah,
so
court people.
You think about, yeah, like technically you have to court your customers because for them to spend money on your product, that's a commitment, right? Like that's a financial commitment. The same way that you would commit to somebody that you're in a relationship with. And so you don't just, you know, when you met your wife for the first time, you didn't say like, hey, you want to get married? Like, let's go, let's do this, right? Like that's super weird and probably offensive.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe the complete opposite of that is where we started.
You might want to start with like a last name and like, yeah. What do you do and where are you from? There's like small talk, right? That would be sort of like a first date. So you can't just assault people with your brand and be like, hey, buy this right now. You know, because that person is going to kind of go, whoa, hey, back it up, mister. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know anything about your beer. Why are you forcing it on me? This is weird. I feel uncomfortable. And those are the people that bounce off of your website or unsubscribe from your email. You have like assaulted their brain in some way that feels very uncomfortable to them. And, you know, product marketing is permission marketing. So you want that person to continue to say like, yeah, I'm going to raise my hand and say, I will go to your website again. I will visit you on social media. I'll follow you on social media. I'll sign up for your email marketing messages. Like, awesome. Let's do this. It sounds great. So you have to figure out a way to put these branded messages out there in the metaverse, you know, in some way, shape or form, that appeals to your target audience so that they keep engaging with your contact, so that they build this relationship with your brand, so that when they find themselves, and this sounds crazy, but this is what happens unconsciously in people's minds when they're making purchase decisions, they revert back to like a memory, right? Like a standout moment, like something that they remember, either an experience that they had or something that they read or something that they might have just seen on Facebook or Instagram or something. And when they're at that point of purchase, you want your brand to be top of mind.
Yes.
So that they think about you. And so, you know, when all these marketing experts out here and they talk about build brand awareness. And I talked to you about this. What that actually means is discovery and recall. That's all that is. Literally, it's, I've discovered your brand and oh shit, I remember it when I'm at the store.
Right.
And I'm going to buy something or like it's the middle of the Saturday afternoon. I'm hanging out with my family, whatever. I feel like getting a beer and going to get a pizza. Oh, I need to go to Red Engine. That makes perfect sense. Right. Like that's where I need to be because you've had some kind of experience, where you have exerted enough influence on my brain, to where I remember you. And, you know, a lot of marketing is digging into what that customer journey looks like, right? And like where you start off at the beginning, like how do you begin with that? oh, I'm going to start a Facebook page, right? Or, oh, I'm going to make my website live, right? And that's kind of the ethos of advertising too. Like maybe I'm going to do some Google ads, or I list my business on Google My Business so that people can find me locally. But it's planting that seed at the beginning of getting people familiar with the name of your company, the products that you make, what you do, how they can buy it, you know, that kind of grunt list test, getting into, you know, okay, now I'm going to click a link and go to your website, and then I'm going to click another link and go to your Facebook page, and then go to your Instagram page, and then maybe you have a YouTube channel, maybe you're subscribing to a podcast, listening to a podcast, signing up for emails, things like that. So you're building that relationship, and then you're not done when that person buys your product. Like you're not just like finished with them and moving on to the next one. You're reinventing the brand and reinforcing. So then they're going every week to your tap room, or they're buying your product every week at the grocery store. And that's what you're looking for ultimately, is repurchase and brand loyalty. I just summed up my entire marketing degree for you in like 30 seconds.
Lucky us.
There you go.
So Julie's kind of touched on it, but brand awareness was actually an assignment that we had, and we were going to do it on social media, and it was going to kind of answer the questions, who are we, where are we located, what products do we have to offer, and then also kind of give you a feel for the brand itself. And so we have, you know, we have it's in the name, Red Engine Brewing Company. It's a fire service themed brewery. We're located in Fillmore, California. We're going to do pizza, beer, charcuterie boards, and have some wine to sell. And then, you know, we're kind of hoping to be like a bold, can't miss us, capable brand. And so when we first got the assignment from Julie, like, hey, try to do a brand awareness ad, like a little mini commercial, and give it like 15 to 30 seconds, see what you come up with. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know, we'll have this done in a couple weeks. She's like, I don't know, it might take you a little longer than a couple weeks. Well, 2 months later, we got our 30 seconds together, and it was incredibly hard to, because when words are easily generated, right? They just flow out of your mouth, or they pop up on your screen. It's like, it's getting your brand made up visually on the screen and trying to express yourself the way you're intending to. It's difficult. It's not an easy task. And I think having a marketing, because we had sent our ad to Julie, and she had some comments on it that were helpful, you know, ultimately, and it ended up being, you know, more information for the viewer to take in by just adding some words on the screen and some other items. And so I think, you need help. You need professionals to kind of guide you. You need help with content creation, capturing it through video, getting it edited. You need the right message and tone to be on there. And this was one 2 month long assignment for 30 seconds. And hopefully your business is going to be alive much longer than that. And so there's a tremendous amount of effort on the marketing end, like lots of research, lots of planning. It's definitely not an accident.
No, it's not. And it's a lot harder than people think. I always, you know, honestly, and you and I were just talking about this earlier today, it's a lot harder than anyone ever thinks to get a brewery open. Something goes wrong, your timeline gets screwed up, you spend twice as much money, it takes twice as long as you thought it would, all of that stuff. It is the same thing with marketing and sales. You always think you got it and you don't. I mean, you can figure it out. I'm not saying you'll never understand it, but it's the same thing. Like a simple 30-second ad is going to take you twice as long as what you originally imagined that it would take you, because it's more serious than just like writing a caption and slapping a video on it and expecting it to work. It is more research than that. And you do have to think about, like, you're not writing that ad for yourself, right? Like, correct. If you read it and you're like, oh, shit, that sounds good, right?
Well, you know everything.
So you're...
You know, no, I mean that in a cocky way. I mean, like, you don't have to market to yourself. You know everything. Exactly. You know what you're trying to say.
You aren't your customer. None of your marketing materials are for you. None of them. Not a single one. They are all for your audience, the people that you're trying to reach. So I always tell folks when they take a first crack at writing, and don't laugh, it is sales copywriting. That's what you're doing when you're writing social media captions, or a blog post or an email or something like that, even the verbiage on your website, you are selling things at this point. It is not a home brewing hobby. So you are writing sales copy. Like, that's what you're trying to do ultimately, because the goal is to get people to buy stuff so that you can stay in business.
Yes.
Otherwise you'd go under, yes. Right? So you have to think about that with your goal in mind. The other thing that I tell people to do is, you know, write up whatever it is you're working on. Let's say it's an ad, you know, take it to your neighbor and show it to them. Take it to like your cousin, like somebody random that has no eyeballs on this project, that has no idea what you're doing. You know, show them your website, show them an ad, show them a social media post, and see if they can tell who you are, what you actually do, and how they can actually buy something from you. And if they can't tell those three things, you got to tweak
retool it. Yeah.
Yep.
It needs to be pretty simple. You know, like there's terms in this little space, like call to action. And so, you know, if you're, and it goes back to the measurables, you know, if you're telling people to do something and later on you go back and measure it and you didn't, it didn't work the way you had intended it. Yeah. You have to, well, you have to know that it didn't work and then try to drill down and figure out why, because you want it to work, you know, more often than not.
But you have to have a way to measure it so that you know that it doesn't work or not. You have to have a, yes, which is good that you mentioned that, because that's another thing that a lot of people don't think about when it comes to like advertising or marketing or selling, is that you have to think about the result that you want to get. So what can you put in there content-wise to get somebody to do something with your piece of marketing? Because otherwise it just sits there. You know, like, yeah, you have to give it a call to action.
So speaking of content and all the original content you're going to be trying to develop with your new brewery, one of the things also in our marketing plan is a content matrix. And so this this is kind of like a little bit of pre-planning. And this is where if you or the owner or whoever's at the front of their operation is kind of the marketing director, if you will, and then maybe you have a social media person or a website person helping you in those areas. Taking essentially like the way I've kind of explained it is like all the things that you sell. If this was a spreadsheet and one column was products. So, and Julie or somebody like this will help you. But like all your core values could be a product. Your team could be your product. The beer could be your product. Community relationships could be a product. These are all things that you're like, you know, trying to, all these different fronts you're trying to push forward with your brand at the center of them. And then the other axis on this spreadsheet is different themes. And so it could be entertainment, education, inspirational, current event update, behind the scenes, could be testimonials, could be all sorts of different things you could run across the other axis. And then you follow these axes down. So, you know, entertainment and tap room. Those two lines intersect in a box. And you might have like a food truck, you might have open mic night,
live music, bingo, something.
Yeah. Yep. So all cornhole tournament. So all these things will all these ideas will live in this box. And if you build out this matrix, you come up with all kinds of future marketing material. And so whenever you have something, you know, that exemplifies like your team and their education level or whatever, you can kind of just run down these boxes you got some ideas in that box that you're able to like share with your social media person, with your content person, or for you to like do something really quick, like a reel or something quickly. And all mm-hmm. the, all this thing has been pre-thought out. It takes a while to come up with the yeah. ideas in each box, but the more material you have in there, it's like that ammo I was talking about at the beginning. You're like, okay, look, we have like 60 different ways to sell ourselves and reach people.
It's a tool that I use with my clients that like, you know, it's an idea bank, right? And it's supposed to eliminate decision fatigue. So what is it called?
You know, decision what?
Decision fatigue.
Oh,
so like
yeah.
you just don't want to make decisions anymore, right? Yeah. Like you're just over it. Your brain is like, you know, and I kept hearing that from people that I was working with. They were like, I get to a point where I'm just like, ugh, I know I need to post something today, but I don't know what to post. And then it comes out like forced, and then it's like a really bad post or like something that's not representative of your brand, or it doesn't make any sense. And then you're not doing yourself any favor. So in the marketing world, we call that brand noise instead of brand value, which means that it hasn't brought any type of value to your audience at all. It's just like there. It just like exists, right? And it's floating around. So like you haven't like created an experience for me or asked me to do anything with it, or I haven't engaged with you, or I'm not going to remember your brand because your post was super pointless, right? I hate to say that about people, but it happens all the time. So coming up with like a content bank or a content matrix will basically remove that factor of like, I have no clue what to post today or for the next week or for the next 2 weeks or for the next month, you know, and this is really helpful if you batch plan your content.
Yes. The next step in this.
Yeah. It's the next step in that. And when I say batch plan your content, so that's like planning your social media posts in advance, planning tweets, planning emails to go out, planning website updates, video content, like stuff like that, right? So, and that kind of encompasses like content marketing as a strategy in that you're giving, you already have established like some themes that relate to your target audience, like things that they care about, right? In that like, they want something entertaining. They want something educational. They want to learn about your brand. They want to see reviews, like what other people think. Stuff like that, that is sort of proven concepts in the consumer packaged goods industry overall. And you're talking about like the different products, you want to think about that concept and that column is kind of like, think of your brand as a person, and those would be all the elements of that person's personality. And that makes up your brand identity, right? So if your core values are important to your brand, talk about your core values. If your beer is important to your brand, which I hope it is, talk about your beer. If food is important, if the tap room is important, if maybe inclusivity and equity is important, right? Maybe, you know, Firefighter owned is important to your brand. Those are the things that you want to kind of list as a theme. And then at those cross sections of those two themes, you kind of come up with ideas, and they don't have to be perfect. You know, I think I told you this all the time. It's like progress over perfection. I would rather you have like a whole bunch of ideas and have them be like imperfect, and you can change them all the time, and they can develop and evolve as your brand grows, but use that as a base so that you aren't just like sitting there going, I have no idea what to email people about, or I don't know what to put on my website, so on and so forth. It's really helpful.
Yeah, so you have this big cache of ideas, and then Julie mentioned batch planning. And so we do that once a month. We try to do it on the first of the month, and we'll plan the whole month out. And, you know, we'll have certain, back to our goals, we kind of look at our goals and our marketing plan, speak to each, make sure we're touching those so that, you know, we're constantly pushing that item or that goal down the road further and with intention. And then all the, like Julie was saying, like the items that are important to your brand, you know, you can put more focus on and let the developers of this information, come up with it throughout the month. Like, you know, we have these deadlines, mm-hmm. we need these posts pushed at these points, and And now this like machine is kind of like circular, like a little bit like you talked about before. It's like, okay, we've highlighted some things we need to do. We've come up with a plan. We got somebody to execute, and now we're measuring results. And it's like kind of going around. At this point, you're like looking in the mirror and you're like, we have a marketing plan. Like, this is good.
You know,
like things are progressing.
It feels really good. Yes. And also with what we talked about earlier and like the evolution of marketing just in the beer space, like when you get to a point where like this, like a marketing plan is going to help you sort of DIY things from the beginning, just in case you can't hire somebody right away to help. It is going to make it that much easier when you do get to that point where, you can hire out or get maybe some contract help, even if you just do it on like a 1099 basis with somebody, you can say like, hey, here's what we expect, right? And then it's super easy to like explain to somebody like, this is our vision, this is where we're taking the company, this is the brand identity, here's some aesthetics that we stick to, here's our logo, here's our color palette, our fonts, like all that stuff. And you'll find that it's so much easier to onboard somebody and to get some help with this later on if you have like all the basics and like a plan of attack, sort of GPS map, so to speak.
I like it. Yeah. Very specific directions. It's everybody likes that on both ends of the relationship there. So I think that's definitely good advice. Hey, Julie, what are some future trends that you see come in the craft beer space when it comes to marketing?
No, you're already doing it. You're ahead of the curve. Video content. Video.
Video over picture.
Over picture. Yes. And way over text. I mean, it started off with text on social media, and then it graduated to photos, and then it graduated to carousel photos where you have like more than one,
More engagement.
And now we've graduated to video. Yes. And not just, videos in general, but short form videos. So like, I'm sure you know the popularity of like Instagram Reels, Facebook Stories, TikTok, just as a whole, network in general. YouTube has now rolled out YouTube Shorts.
I don't know if you've noticed that or not, but
I think that's the name.
They're jumping on that Reel bandwagon.
I don't know. They're jumping on the Reel TikTok, bandwagon. By the way, I love YouTube as like a future casting sort of channel for beer folks. YouTube, honestly, they have better algorithms than Facebook and Instagram, and more advertiser friendly, which is really fun. Okay. Very well targeted advertising. But I think short form, quick video hits is something that people really enjoy. People are busy. It's a little bit more personal than just a still photo or just text. But it really, honestly, I would say the other thing is just more specialized. Like people want to get to know your brand as a person. You know what I mean? They want to know that there's like people behind this like brand identity. They want you to be more human and more something that they can connect with. They want to know about your team and how you got started and your origin stories and all that kind of stuff, which is perfect because that's what craft beer people do. That's what we do.
They want to know the whole story. Yeah.
And tell them that. Like, tell them, please, I'm begging you, tell all your stories. Like, the consumers today, and this could be a whole different podcast, when you're looking at the population of like the United States that is legal drinking age, the majority of that legal drinking age sector is either Gen Z or millennials. Right? Mm-hmm. I fall outside of that. I'm a Gen Xer. I'm not a target audience anymore. I know. I'm totally in that consumer set though. But those are the generational groups that have the most purchasing power in the beverage alcohol space right now. Those are the folks that want short form video content, and they want you to be on multiple channels. But they want you to care about something more than making money. They want to know what you stand for. They want to know the identity of your brand. They want to know why you decided on your location or where you're going to go and what you're doing. And they want to get to know your staff. And so that part of modern marketing, that's where I see this going and just continuing with those trends is, I don't know, short form video content, make it personal, make it human.
Yeah. Keep it. Yeah. I like those just 2 points. Keep it simple. Shoot for a target you can achieve. So that's,
I say keep it simple. We just talked for like an hour about marketing plans.
Well, and the initial plan, simple, like, you know, okay, yeah. Everyone understands it, how to get there. You know, that's the how and the why, and you know, that's the magic basically how and why
exactly.
You're able to get there.
So
we got future trends. We went over a little bit of a marketing plan, talked briefly about social media, as a goal, mm-hmm. and then as a way to kind of batch plan and get your marketing plan, you know, out there into reality. And it could, social media or your website could be the primary places that you're focusing marketing energy. So Julie, how can people get in touch with you if they're interested in, getting some education, you know, bringing up their situational awareness and putting together a plan for themselves?
I hope they get in touch with me. So I tell people first things first, just go straight to my website. That's the easiest way to find me. I'm a one woman show over here in Colorado. So anything that you see on my website, if it says like contact me, it just goes straight to me, like my email address.
Yes.
So it's notyourhobbymarketing.com. Pretty easy. It's spelled like it sounds. And you can also find me on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. I am also on TikTok, believe it or not, even though I'm a Gen Xer.
All right, Julie, getting out of that comfort zone.
And so I'm more of a lurker than a poster, but that's because I keep track of marketing trends. So.
Right.
All of those are at Not Your Hobby Marketing, except for Twitter. Someone took my Twitter handle. I don't know who you are, but if you're listening, I will come after you. It is at Not Your Hobby MS on Twitter. Reach out to me anytime. My email is julie@notyourhobbymarketing.com. I have different ways that I work with people. I'm pretty transparent about pricing because there's no reason in being secretive about that.
One of the reasons we committed to Julia is she was not afraid to talk about how much this is going to cost. It's not intimidating. It's very straightforward. It just is what it is. You got to talk about it. And it was really easy to get that information early.
Well, thank you. I'm a firm believer in non-predatory marketing. So if you want to hang with me, come on in. The
Let's
door
do
is open. I will welcome you in. If you don't want to be there, that's cool. I'm not mad at you. Like, you can go. It's totally fine.
Exactly.
So yeah, I like to be transparent with people as best as I can. But I've got some online courses for people that just want to like DIY and do stuff on their own. I have a group coaching program that has like a really low monthly retainer of like $30 a month. And I joke around that it's like Netflix, but for like beer business
I like
planning. And then I do work with people one-on-one. So I do like one-on-one coaching, consulting, and that's kind of a long-term thing. So yeah, reach out to me if you need any help. And I do go beyond beer. I know I say beer a lot, but I do work with like cider companies and mead and kombucha and stuff like that. So usually malt beverage. I hate to say that. Wine and spirits is kind of a whole different animal. But you know, the malt folks and the apple people, we've meshed well.
We've found a common ground here. That's good.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, listen, that is all we have for today's show on marketing. A little brief overview, a little insight into things that we've done and some successes and challenges that we've faced throughout the process of building a marketing plan and opening a business. So if you have any questions, you can always contact us at built@redenginebrewingcompany.com. And if you need to reach out to Julie, I encourage you to do that. But as always, thank you for making it this far. This is Built and Brew, episode 11. We do have some guests that we're lining up in the next couple weeks. We hope to get these shows edited and out to you guys so you can follow along in our journey. We'll see you next time.
If you have any questions that were not answered during the show, feel free to email built@redenginebrewing.com. That's B-U-I-L-T @redenginebrewing.com. If you'd like to hear more content, don't forget to subscribe to the show. Built and Brewed is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Until next time, pack those mash tuns and make it rain in the whirlpool. That's Built and Brewed.